difficulties thing going on here tonight. But I am David Master, sitting in for my dad tonight. And if you'd like to call, the number is 1-800-866-8883. And I want to talk tonight about the death of individuality. Because this is what is happening to our society today. And it has been happening for a very long time. And I have some pretty startling material from a classic science fiction movie that it occurred to me that this movie really showed the condition of human beings, you know, over the many eons that human beings have existed. And you know, science fiction is an interesting vehicle for delivering ideas because it kind of depersonalizes it. You know, when it's very personal, it's harder to deal with. If somebody calls you a name, you can take it, you know, one of many ways. But if you hear somebody else call somebody else a name, you can say, oh, look at that. Look what happened there. And it's different because it's not directed at you. So the point is that science fiction has a unique power to deliver, you know, disturbing ideas that cannot often be delivered from one person to another. I mean, when you have a chance to talk to somebody, do you sit down and you say, "Yeah, I got to talk to you about your problems"? I'm trying to get my computer going here. And okay, give me a minute here. I'm trying to get my, yeah, there you go. Getting my computer with my music and all my other stuff. And this is the problem in relationships between husband and wife, between parents and children, between people and their friends, between government and the governed. Do you really think the government wants you to have an individual life, to be an individual? Can government afford to allow individuality? Can it? And as you see, as our government grows, it grows toward taking more away from you in terms of what you can and cannot do or say or think. Now you think about that. That's kind of scary. It is actually very scary. The government is there more than anything to try to take away your ability to be you. And, you know, you've seen it over the last, I mean, for those of you who are, you know, similar in age to me, 10, 15, 20 years, either way, you see the encroachment of government. So I'm going to talk about this tonight on the show. 1-800-866-8883. My dad's just taking a night off. And, yes, I would love to talk to you. And many people, you know, when I'm screening calls, they ask me, "Hey, can I talk to you?" "No, you got to talk to my dad." So here I am, 1-800-866-8883. David Master sitting in tonight. Yes, and it is Advice Line. David Master sitting in tonight. Just weaving my way through a lot of little technical issues here because I'm having to do a lot of the technical stuff and do the show. Welcome, welcome to everybody. 1-800-866-8883 is the number. The topic tonight is the death of individuality. Are you a victim of that? Yes. The answer is yes. There are very few individuals left, and I think if we look at the things that are going on now in politics, I think it's very reflective of the fact that we have a person who is an anti-politician. And now an anti-politician running for president is kind of like an antibody in your body that senses something malevolent. And its only job is to go in and remove that malevolent thing to keep your body healthy. So when we have an anti-politician taking the reins, the political class, the anti-individual class of people are frightened. They're very frightened, and they even, and this is something my dad's talked about for many years, they also, when they're afraid, first they try to lash out at what they're afraid of, and it actually hasn't done any good this time. To attack the anti-politician is to empower and enlarge the anti-politician. So over the weekend, we saw some news footage of the political class turning on itself. Like two dogs that are barking at you through a fence, and you don't react to them, and they can't get a take on you. And you have your force field up around you, and these two dogs are barking, and then suddenly they start fighting with each other. This is what we witnessed over the weekend. The anti-political class is rising in America. The individualist class is coming back to life with an infusion of authentic individualism, as an example. You don't hear it very often. Most of the time, it's ultra-conformism. Everything you hear, everything you see, the world is designed like the Matrix. The truth is pulled over your eyes. The truth about the world you live in. The truth that you're not living your own life. That, in fact, you are a slave. And the system that you were born into is designed to cripple you and take away your ability to act and be and think authentically. Now, remember, this is as old as time itself. And I'm not one of those people that believes anymore that human beings have only been here for 5 or 6 or 7,000 years. I'm quite certain that human beings have been on this planet perhaps hundreds of thousands of years, maybe millions of years. Who knows? There's a lot of interesting fossil evidence that's coming up that shows human footprints at the same place where dinosaur footprints are found, and that's wet mud stuff that can't be refuted. But that's another story. I don't want to talk about that part of it, because the part I want to talk about is the movie that was made back in the 1960s I can't remember who made it, but the name of the movie is H.G. Wells' Time Machine, The Time Machine, the original version. And in the original version, it is done so well. I mean, the new version, which came out sometime around 2002 or 3, somewhere around there, it's just more of a science fiction movie. But the 1960 version of the original H.G. Wells' Time Machine shows the struggle as this man moves into the future hundreds of thousands of years and discovers something. So now I've got something that I did a number of years ago that I think is very good, and it illustrates the point I'm talking about, which is the death of individuality and the fact that the problem that you have, the main numero uno problem that you have is that you're not living your own life. You aren't thinking your own original thoughts. My dad had a caller last night with a lady that had a thought, just one reoccurring thought, that was sort of driving her slowly insane. You have those thoughts too. Now, the question is, do you want to be free from those maddening thoughts? And if the answer is yes, then I'm going to play part one of two parts that I have prepared. And I'm going to, and again, the number here, 1-800-866-8883. I have lines open. And I'll put you on hold if you call, because I'm the only person here doing everything. I'd love to talk to you about this and your individuality issues, or the lack thereof. So, H.G. Wells' Time Machine, number one.
But he's somewhere between halfway, between wanting the truth and not wanting the truth. And then, of course, the circumstances of our life propel us in different directions. You know, the word emotion comes from the Latin word to emote, which means to move from. So emotion is a mover. It causes us to move and reach and back away, and it causes a complex system of behaviors as it propels us through life. And so some people are more in control of their emotions than others. But everyone, every human being, has a number of different mechanisms, because we also have, beyond emotion, we have reason, see, and we have consciousness, and we know the difference innately between right and wrong. But as we are programmed by the environment that we come into, slowly but surely, what we could have been, what we all could be, if we were allowed to be free from contamination, from the environment that we live in, something of the environment, a piece, a part, a component of the environment that we grow up in, becomes us, and we adopt an external view of who we are, and then we become what we adopt. We embrace it. And so the problem is that every single human being has become an extension of something from the outside. See, we're outformed people. And so becoming informed or inwardly formed requires for a person to awaken to the fact that all that's happening in their life is a result of the conditionings that have caused each one of us to lose our original potential, the conditionings and the programmings that have caused every one of us on some level to lose our original potential, to become different people than we are right now. And so why do I bring up H.G. Wells' Time Machine? Well, I get insights. I get picture insights. I'm a picture thinker. I'm not an abstract thinker. And it occurred to me that, in a sense, in the environment that we are currently finding ourselves in and throughout the world, the characters in the H.G. Wells' Time Machine movie seem very pertinent, because in the story, this man invents a time machine and he moves 800,000 years ahead in time, and he walks through the jungle and he finds this group of people, these beautiful people. They're all taken care of and they seem almost perfect. And he thinks to himself, so this is the future of the human race, to bask in the sun and enjoy life. And just as he's thinking that, a woman falls in the water, a stream, and as she's drowning, all of the people around her that are sitting there are just sort of nonchalantly watching her, sort of oblivious to her dilemma. So he runs and jumps in the water, the hero of the story, and saves the girl. And so he pulls her out of the water and he asks her, is she okay? And then she suddenly just stands up and walks away as if nothing happened. She's sort of indifferent completely, like everyone else in the environment is like indifferent to each other. And so he's puzzled. The hero is puzzled and he doesn't understand what has happened to these people. So I found the scene in the movie where these people called the Eloi, they are going to a large dining hall, and the woman he rescues stops to return his coat to him. And this is their dialogue. Listen to this.
Why did you?
Why did I what?
Come after me.
Sit down. I did it to save your life. That doesn't seem to mean much to you or anybody else around here.
It doesn't.
Do you realize there are about 20 of your friends watching you drown? Not one of them so much as lifted a finger to save you. It's a very curious attitude. Very curious world. Aren't you the least bit interested in who I am? Where I come from?
Should I be?
I think perhaps you better take me to somebody a little older. Somebody I can talk to.
There is no one older.
You mean nobody ages in this land of yours? Well, what's your name?
He's trying to understand the mindset of these people. Well, of course, as we find out, nobody ages because every so often something happens that's very strange. What you're hearing are the air raid sirens. This brings me to the point, why am I bringing this up? Because when the air raid siren sounds, all of the pampered people, all of these beautiful people, hypnotically march toward their own doom. They go toward an underground cavern where those who take care of them and provide for their every need and pamper them and feed them, those creatures that live underground, which are called Morlocks, and they aren't human-looking. They look like little demons. Those creatures have provided everything for a reason, so that eventually, once these Eloi reach a certain age, they're a food source to the underground dwellers. And so this is very relevant to the condition that many people find themselves in, that we turn to the people who seem to be caring for us and giving to us and nurturing us. But ultimately, what we are to many of them is nothing more than a meal. Now, I'm not saying that literally. I'm saying that as a way of trying to explain to you that the people that try to give you everything and try to provide you so that you don't have to do anything for yourself, so that you don't have to develop character, so that you don't have to become independent and think for yourself and live a unique and authentic life and become an original version of an original person. The people in our lives that cripple us, and so often in the name of love.
Yeah, so often in the name of love. Now, the air raid sirens, you might think, well, that's strange, air raid sirens, 800,000 years in the future, but think of the symbolism of that. The air raid sirens were, especially in England, and I believe also here in the United States when I was very young, they were warning sirens that danger was coming. But in the future, the warning sirens had become converted to a Pavlovian conditioning, ringing the bell, actuating the people who were hypnotized or brainwashed, the food, the human food, to get up and get in line at the old air raid shelter where they went downstairs and there were demon butchers down there waiting to eat them. It's a terrible scenario. I mean, it's a horror movie in a lot of ways, but it's not done in a horrible way. Your kids could watch it too. And see, I use that though as a way of trying to help you understand. You don't have problems. Problems have you. You don't have anger. Anger has you. You don't have fear. Fear has you. You know, I was gripped by fear. Well, what does that mean? I was gripped by fear. I was gripped by anger. Anger overcame me. Come on, people. Come on, let's think about it. You are not in control of yourself because something or someone else is. And my dad told me this when I was very young. If you're not in control of yourself, someone or something else will be. And I thought about that, and I started becoming aware of all the possible things that could possibly get in my head. And all the temptations around me in the world. And I realized that he was right. And now I had to learn to be in control of myself. We'll be right back. Okay. And so I'm saying, my dad told me when I was, I don't know, probably still a teenager, maybe 17, 18 years old. But he also said it. I heard what he said. I would listen to my dad. Funny thing is, when I went to high school, I was sort of a very nonconformist, very, very devout individualist. So much so that when I sat on the senior lawn, apple cores and different things would come flying in my direction because the seniors didn't like me. And that's because I wrote an article in the school newspaper called Gaudy Medal and Ego Trips, and it was about sports, about organized sports. Because I thought that, you know, if you're like a circus animal that performs and tries to get a trophy for performing for the judges, it takes something away from the pureness of it. So even though I've been a surfer, you know, ever since I was 12 years old, I have never competed ever in a contest because I didn't believe that it would. I thought that it was damaging to the intent of doing it. Now, of course, you can be a contestant and not be, you know, destroyed by the contest. But at the same time, you see that it sort of becomes an all-consuming thing. And people's personalities change when they become hyper-focused on winning. And, you know, it's interesting to note that we, in our current political climate, winning is a very important thing right now. And everybody's super focused on winning and losing. And I guess that's part of the game of life, winning and losing. There's no way around, you know, it's one or another, I imagine, on every level of life. I imagine that winning and losing, but, you know, I guess how you play the game, I think, is very important and determines so much of that outcome, whether you win or lose, how you play that game. And if you're a straight shooter and you are in the game, in it not just to win it, but to be a part of a solution, then I think that that's a much more pure motivation than being in something to prove how great you are. And that you can, you know, you can be the best. And I think one of the sort of more gruesome aspects of that is the mixed martial art cage fighting. And I'm not a big boxing fan. I used to watch it a little bit. But, you know, just watching these human beings just beat each other senseless. And in the end, you know, the guy who is less beaten is the winner. I suppose that's sort of a Spartan ethic, and I'm very for the Spartan ideals of self-mastery and being principled and uncompromising in the face of evil. So winning, yes, winning is an important thing, but not at all costs. Sometimes you win and you lose, and I know you know what I'm talking about. And again, this is part of the death of individualism, the death of the individual in America, because at one level, the bar has been lowered so far that you can just be the biggest kind of loser. And there's a support group out there that's fighting for your civil rights. I'm not talking about you, the audience in particular, but I'm sure there are people out there know what I'm talking about. And really, I mean, this whole thing that's descended down to a potty level, a bathroom level, it's about as low as you can go, literally. But you see, there are those who are the antagonists, and they bring up these things to irritate us and to get us angry and make us focus on injustice. And of course, when you're angry, and when you're angry toward injustice, you become sort of an extension of that. So it's a very slippery slope, because you have to be able to see injustice but not hate it. Jesus taught us this, and I think that was his most important message: don't hate your tormentor. And then the second equation becomes, well, your tormentor becomes your mentor. So a lot of you are in horrible relationships with other people, and there's nothing you can do. You're sort of trapped in those relationships. And instead of hating the person, you have to let it go, give up the hate, and acquire patience and look at yourself and see that, like the H.G. Wells story, the time machine, you have a choice between who you allow to control you and how you allow them to affect you. And if you allow people to affect you in a negative way, they're controlling you. And I had a situation where someone was yelling at me last week. It was like, it became very funny to me because they were saying things that were so extreme. I got to a point where I couldn't help but laugh. You see, in other words, though, you can internalize and say, wow, well, it's so horrible. People saying terrible things about me. I mean, you see this going on in the news. The news is all about spin right now. Did he say somebody was a bimbo? Wow, is that the worst? Is that the worst thing you could call somebody is a bimbo? You see how it goes, though. It goes from one thing to another with the fools in the media. Because they on the left side of the equation, they have no idea what they're fighting. This uprising of individuals, they don't understand it because they're all a bunch of clones. They're like the Eloi, or they're like the there's another group on Star Trek. I can't think of what the name is now. But they all feel the same thing at the same time. See, and you know, you are part of that equation, because until you become a part of the solution, you're still a part of the problem. You think about that. You can't be both. You have to make a choice about what side you're going to be on. And again, the whole thing starts with this one, with one man, with one woman, when one person is all it takes to start an amazing set of circumstances, an amazing situation that evolves very organically, very rapidly into a movement. And see, one person can inspire many, many millions of people. And you have to do that in your own life. You really do. You have to become an inspiration, because if you're not an inspiration, you make people have a lot of perspiration.
Okay.
Just put somebody on hold. 1-800-866-8883. I'm going to take a quick break here attend to a few things, and I'll screen this call. And if you want to call, again, the number is 1-800-866-8883. David Master sitting in tonight while my dad just takes a night off. My dad reminds me that he's been in radio 55,000 years. No, I'm sorry, 55, more than 55. All right, we'll be right back. This is Advice Line. I'm David Masters. Don't go away. Okay, well, here I am again, back in the saddle. And I guess, you know, I'm going to have to figure out another system here. It's a little bit different when you're running the board. But have you lost your individuality? And the question is, are you ready to see why? There's always a huge temptation, an enormous temptation, to go along with the crowd. And I remember one of the first things I became aware of with people who smoked were they would say, well, you know, I can quit if I want to. And hey, everybody else does it, so why not? I mean, that's sort of a standard thing. You know what I'm saying? All right. So here I'm going to try to
start this machine here.
No, I can't do it. I thought I could do it, but I can't. All right. 1-800-866-8883. That's the number. Did you go along with the crowd when you were younger?
I bet you did. And was it a time in your life where your parents basically didn't even know that you were doing anything? That they sort of were too caught up in their own lives not to even be aware of what you were going through? Because, you know, the 60s, 70s, 80s, that was pretty much a time of absolute self-absorption by everyone. Parents and the kids were all just sort of left to go out like the dog gets out of the backyard and just nobody goes to get him. And I kind of grew up in that time because I was the oldest of five kids. You know, I was the last one to get dinner, probably the last one to come in the house at night, usually pretty late at night. Sometimes I'd find my dad sitting on the sofa waiting for me. And I'd sneak upstairs and then he'd come in and look at me and I'd be in there asleep. So, you know, and sometimes I'm waiting for you. I'm waiting for you. Oh, yeah, I was just out skateboarding. No big deal. Yeah. But, you know, I'm one of the ones that survived. And I did, because my dad did care about me. And he did love me. And he wanted good for me. And I know many that have been sort of indelibly damaged, marked by the experience of the world. I mean, you're one of them. You're one of those people. And but there's a new life. See, there's Jesus said, "Marvel ye not. You must be born again." The born again experience is actually more natural once you're here than actually coming into the world. It doesn't take that much effort. It's actually an effortless thing. So if you're interested, you want to try this meditation exercise my dad's been teaching called Be Still and Know. Or you go to FHU.com or you go to antidoteforall.com and there you can listen to the 7-minute meditation. It's very easy. It's very simple. And it helps you to understand that you can have control over your mind at any given point once you choose to do so. Have another break here. 1-800-866-8883. David Master sitting in tonight while my dad just takes a night off.
Listening to Advice Line with Roy Masters. You can reach Roy at 1-800-866-8883. That's 1-800-866-8883.
Yes, yes, yes. It is Advice Line. And I'm acting like the Wizard of Oz here behind the curtain, pulling all the levers and so on. But you must not ignore this little man behind the curtain. Not a good idea to ignore this little man. All right, I do have a call. I guess I'll take a chance here. If it's no good, I'll just dump it out. Whoever you are, you're on the air. Hello?
Yes.
Go ahead, talk. Hold on. All right, now you're on the air. Go ahead.
There we go. Good evening, David. This is Robert.
Hey, Robert. Haven't heard you for a long time. How are you doing?
Yes. Wow. How nice that you recognize my... What I was...
Let me ask you a question. Have I butchered the show pretty good or not?
No. You know what? You stepped in and you're accomplishing it and you're staying calm.
Well, that's the only way to go, baby.
That's right. I was just thinking about responding to our environment.
Okay.
And... is it in the stillness I realize that God's given us Jesus Christ to respond to in our life, and I'm no longer responding to the world. I'm responding to that spirit that's within me that's kicked out that, and now I have that to respond with and relate with instead of the world.
Okay, I hear what you're saying, and it's wonderful. But we got to walk it back a little bit here.
Go ahead.
Because even the scripture says you're first of flesh and second of spirit. Now, I remember talking to you many years ago, and you were kind of overwhelmed by the world that you were living in.
Right.
As we all are when we start this journey.
Yes.
Now, in my world, it was a little different because, you know, by the time I was old enough to wondering about the, you know, what is the meaning of my life or, you know, those kind of questions, I had this bigger-than-life dad who was writing, you know, all kinds of incredible things. And one of the things I was talking about when I was in high school, my dad used to have these monthly manuscripts. There were maybe 18 or 20 pages. I remember one time I took one to work or to school. It was human vampirism or psychic vampirism. Because, you know what?
I remember those. Yeah, I used to get them. I loved them. They were nice and quick.
They were, but for me, as a struggling teenager in an adult world, a couple of my teachers were pretty whacked out. They were not very nice people, particularly my English teacher and one of my art teachers. And, you know, I would find myself reading, like, psychic vampirism. Well, what the heck is psychic vampirism? You know, it's people that feed off of other people's reactions. It's that simple. But once I understood that, this will make you laugh. I had this friend named Larry, and we were both in the same art class. I think it was a sculpting class of some sort. So the teacher did not like us. He was a very mean, impatient guy. And he and I used to giggle and laugh, and you know how guys are, that, you know, throw clay at each other, whatever.
Sure.
So he warned us. He says, you know, don't upset me. This is my class, and you're going to listen to me, and you're going to be out of here. So this one day, my friend asked me a question about, I was sculpting something, I think, and he asked me, well, how do you do that? And the teacher comes storming over and, like, grabbed my friend and just, like, picked him up and threw him out of the classroom. And he said, you get out, too. Go to the dean.
Wow.
Oh, but that was a big mistake. That was a big mistake for this guy because he didn't realize that I had psychic vampirism on my mind. And that this guy was a tyrant ruling over this classroom and all the kids were scared. So I said to my friend Larry, I said, we're sitting there waiting to, you know, we have to write an account, our own account of what happened. And I said, now, I want you to look at what I'm writing. I wrote this whole thing about how he was angry. And when we would come into the classroom, there was this sort of air of fear and
wow.
Anxiety about it. And everybody felt like they had to do exactly what he said or they would explode. And so my friend wrote similar things to what I was telling, you know, in my paper. So we never even got to see the dean, which was really interesting because we turned in our papers. And within about a week or two, this teacher disappeared and then was replaced by a substitute.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. Yep. And I always wondered what happened to that teacher. And I went back to the dean's office one day, maybe 6 months later, and I said, what happened to the teacher? And they said, well, he ended up having to go to some kind of institution. See, because what happens is he was dethroned. Now, it was not my intent to do anything.
No, it wasn't. That's the power.
It is. That's the power.
And see, didn't even, like, fight. And see, the other thing, David, I'm learning too, is the will. It's just the absence of your will.
Yes.
When you give yourself to another will, and all of a sudden you're hooked up with something that you get yourself out of the way, and he throws a light on everything, and you just speak what you see.
Now,
I'll
give you another example.
Am I right? That was very powerful.
You know, I don't even know if I was hooked up then. I was just kind of, I was in my student stage of learning the truth, okay?
Oh, okay.
And the truth is a very powerful thing. You don't have to be powerful with the truth.
Right.
The truth stands all by itself.
Yes.
So I had this English teacher, and this was another hypersensitive person. And
you're taking them out one at a time.
Well, these are true stories. I would not make these things up. I mean, it's too serious.
Right.
This teacher did not like me because for whatever reason, I have a funny guy. I had a good personality. I couldn't kind of contain myself. And so, again, she threw me out of the classroom for making jokes or something. So she said, before you come back, I'm going to have sit down with your mother. I can't remember what they call them, where they have
parent-teacher
meeting. That's what it was.
Whatever.
Yeah, parent-teacher meeting.
Yeah.
So I remember my mom coming back, and she was like, that poor woman. She said that literally the woman broke down crying because she was trying to figure out how to control me.
Yeah.
And then she confessed to my mom that she was having problems with her teeth and all this other stuff. And literally, my mom felt sorry for her because my mom knew me, you know. So, you know,
it's, no, that.
And so, you know, I don't even think I went back in that class, actually. That I kind of ruled that high school because there were several classes that in my later years, as I got a little bit more understanding under my belt, I didn't want to do a Spanish-American history. I talked about this another time, but I asked the teacher, I said, look, you know, I'm not going to learn this stuff. Why don't you just let me have an extra art class? So he says, well, go ask the dean. He says, I don't care. If you don't want to do this. So I actually had 3 hours of art. And Mr. Frickholm, God bless him, rest his soul, was such an amazing guy. He let me be me.
Wow.
And I, you know, I would just sit in there and I would just draw. And I actually had my own one-man art show when I was in 12th grade.
Right.
But see, what happened was that because I wasn't, you know, at first we're all subject to our environment. Until we understand what that environment really is. And that environment is the system of control. And, you know, high school and work life, it's all the same in marriage. Each one of these different layers of environment are systems of control. So by the time I was 17 years old, I understood that these people did not know what they were doing, that they were just actors in a big play. And once I understood that they didn't know what they were doing, I stopped feeling their pressure. I didn't resent them anymore. I didn't feel the pressure that they tried to exert over me. You see what I'm saying?
In other words, they were just following a script.
Exactly.
That they were compelled to speak and be.
Yeah. And the interesting thing, and it's still true today, it doesn't matter where you go, no one had ever been able to stand up to them the way I did because my dad was writing some very profound things, and I was sitting there studying it. You know what I'm saying? Just little bits
stage
at a time.
One, right. Stage one is learning it, right.
Yeah, in other words, just the exposure to the ideas.
Yes.
You know, some people are very linear, and they don't get abstract things very good. But I was I'm always a picture thinker, so when I read something, I see a movie.
Oh, gosh, David.
Yeah, that's why awesome. I could never learn how to fly an airplane, because I couldn't do book learning. I had to go up and fly, which I did. I know how to fly an airplane, but I don't have my license. I'm not good at book learning.
Right.
But when you bring up, Robert, the environment, you see, the environment is there, and the environment is your medium. It's like the water for a fish. It's the place where you go from one place to another on a journey, like Finding Nemo.
Oh, okay.
See, it's a journey through life. The environment is like the ocean that the fish swim in, and there's all kinds of predators, and you know the world is just filled with problems and problematic situations. At the same time, once you understand that you don't have to be a part of that world in the way that other people are, your life begins to, and you take on a joy of living that is unparalleled, because other people they try to find happiness in all the wrong things. They try to escape
in those things in that world.
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
Yeah. So, but you know, by the time I was 22, 23 years old, I was done with it. I went to a party one time. I sat out in the backyard and I just watched from a distance all these people. I thought, what the heck am I doing here? This is not my world. I don't belong here. And then a couple of the guys that I knew came out in the backyard, and they said, what are you doing out here? You know, you're usually like in the middle of the party. I said, nah, not tonight. And they said, what's wrong with me? You know, like, and I said, I looked at them, I said, there's actually not anything wrong with me right now. I'm just observing. That's what I'm doing.
See, and you could have been in a place where, hey, this makes me, I don't like the way this makes me feel. I remember I felt that way, but you know what I said? I'm not going to base it on how I'm feeling. I'm going to look at that too. And I'm not going to let it emote me or move me. I'm just going to look at it. And I almost, in a sense, embraced my humanity of it. Like, isn't it interesting how it makes me feel lonely? And I can understand why people feel lonely. But you know what? This isn't it. I know there's something beyond this. I'm just going to look at this.
Well,
and pretty soon that went away.
Yes.
So it's just very interesting. And I'm able to deal with many people that are in troubled situations that are cruel and mean. And it doesn't mean anything when they, it's just, they're attempting to be cruel and mean, but it's not working on me.
So
it's just interesting.
Like I was saying, in the ocean.
Yes, the ocean. I'm sorry.
Let me give you an example of one of the perfect examples of the survival of the fittest. When the tortoises go onto shore and on these remote islands and lay their eggs, they lay many, 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 many eggs, and most of them get eaten by seagulls and other birds of prey.
Sure.
See, and so there's only so many that escape, and I think life is kind of like that. I mean, you know, you taking your chances every time you're dealing with the world, and your children go out into the world, and you turn on the TV, those
yes.
creatures are there to peck away at you and, you know, and cripple you and destroy you. But if you get away, you become very strong, and then you're a survivor. Now, I got to take a quick break here. Stay with me, Robert, because
yes,
we're going to continue this conversation. Hold on. Quick break here. I just have to transition. It's what I do for my dad, and I'll do it for myself, too. See how easy that was? Bada bing, bada bang. Okay, Robert, you're back.
Yes.
So,
yeah, that's the
go ahead.
Thing. Go ahead. Finish it.
No, that's it. I mean, I just...
Okay, now, once you take care of... How do you care about your... You can't live just like you had to do it on your own, and you had a great, wonderful father. You still had to do your own. How do you feel towards your children? That's a risk. They're on their own. You can't chew their food for them or win their victories.
No, and...
How do you deal with that?
Let me give you a sort of an example, okay?
Okay.
What are these people? They're survivalists. They're...
the preppers?
The preppers. So what you do is you try to prep them as best you can, and you try to lead them by example.
Yes.
And there's no use in saying anything to your kids if you're not going to do it. See?
Yes.
Because what you show them is that you have one standard for you and another standard for them. And, of course, there's certain things like, well, you can't let them drive, but, you know, by the age of 13, a kid should be able to sit behind the wheel and go around in a circle. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
But there's not a lot of things you want to be different. You can't really have standards for them that you don't live by. And I think most parents are seen by their children as hypocrites. And so right away, other authority figures become more appealing. See what I'm saying?
Wow.
People that are more believable.
That's interesting. That could be for a large portion of the audience. But if you... I'm not preaching anything to my children. I live my life, and they come to me. I never try to preach prior.
Yeah.
I wait for them to come to me. And at that time, it feels like it's fertile soil. I don't try to water or feed soil that they're like, I got this one, Dad, for a while. And
well, how old are your
know
kids?
It's not the time. It's when they come to me, it seems very, they're open for that.
How old are they?
I drop. Throughout their age. Now they're in their early 20s.
Yeah.
But
so 20s is a breakaway time. Yeah.
But I'm just wondering, there still is a risk. There's, again, you don't know which way. And believe me, when you hear them say the right thing, you hear them see it for themselves, there's no greater joy for your children when
but,
they see
but
it.
But there's also a danger in having them repeat things that you want to hear. So you got to be very careful with that, too.
No, it's not. Yeah, I know the difference.
Hold on 1 second. We've got to take a quick break here. Hold on. 1-800-866-8883. David Masters just sitting in tonight for my dad, Roy Masters, taking a night off.
With Roy Masters. You can reach Roy at 1-800-866-8883. That's 1-800-866-8883.
Okay. Back now for another 5 minutes, okay? Again, the number here, 1-800-866-8883. Cat, got your tongue out there? Okay. Robert, welcome back.
Yes, thank you. What I was noticing is that if I had preached them a knowledge, that they would just repeat the knowledge back to me. What I did is I swear, David, I didn't use a knowledge thing. And then so when they come back to me, it's original thought of what they're seeing about something that I could have never told them because it's something they saw for themselves. And that's how I know the difference between them just telling me what I want to hear.
Well, my dad said something to me yesterday about this.
Okay.
And he says, it's not what you say, it's who says it. And now, let me give you an example of why that's so powerful.
Okay. Right?
Because let's say that anybody could learn and repeat the words of Jesus. But only Jesus had the ability, as far as we know, to raise the dead.
Right.
So it was Jesus, the person of Jesus, that he was permeated with that Holy Spirit. And that, you know, it couldn't have been anyone else. It had to be him because he was the original. And so when you go through life on this journey and you go through your learning experiences, and you become more authentic as a person. You face life's challenges and you learn from those experiences. And then the learning actually transforms you. The transformation from a person who did not understand that you were reacting and being the effect of a cause to understanding why you're reacting and then watching yourself go through this whole process of becoming more objective. And then at a certain point, you personify those experiences learned. You become the beacon and the light shines out of you. And it's not that you light your own candle. It's the light is there.
Yes, well said.
And so it may not be your children. Your children may, you know, even I think there's reference to, you know, that a prophet isn't recognized in his own neighborhood. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So the people that know you, well, they could be too familiar with you. And familiarity breeds contempt.
Yes.
So you can't have hard feelings toward your children or people that could help you and don't.
But that's right.
That's all part of the experience of going through this world and not becoming transformed by the world, but as the Bible says, being transformed by the renewing of your mind from within.
Yes.
And you become the epitome of those truths that you love. See?
That's right. Well, part of it was thanks to your dad. I remember at 17, I first put on that record. And when it was finished, I said, what was that? That was nothing. And then now looking back, I realize, yeah, that's right. It is nothing. That's what it's about. You have nothing, and you're just willing yourself into all the trouble you're getting into. And so the meditation exercise is a slowly realizing process of the futility of your will and actually not identifying with it. And identifying with it less and less and less and less and less.
Richard, the only thing I could do is share with you my experience, and it's kind of basic.
Go ahead.
I had 3 near-fatal accidents by the time I was 18, and I thought on the last one.
Wait a minute. You mean close to death?
Yeah. Yeah. And the last time I said, you know what? I looked up in the sky. I almost drowned. And I looked up in the sky, I was laying in the water on the beach, and I said, God, I don't want to live this way anymore. I'd rather be dead than go on living this way. Because it was just, you know, you know that there's going to be another accident. And the next one might be the last one. So I said, I don't want to live this way. Suddenly my life started to change. And that's when I started meditating, you know, and I was about your age. I was not 18 yet. I had a record, but, you know, I had all kinds of strange experiences with the record, you know. It was almost like half the time I'd sit there and somebody would take a finger, an invisible finger, would push the needle and it would go right across the record. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. There's forces out there, isn't
there? Oh, yeah. There was, you fall asleep and I thought, okay, I fall asleep. I'm going to try it again. But it literally took me 3 years of consistently sitting and just, you know, learning how to become aware. And the way I could tell that things were changing was that because after a while, after maybe a year, I saw this little tiny spot of light, almost like a star way in the distance. Right?
It's so subtle.
It was. And then the next year, I noticed that every so often, I would notice that that light, that little bright star at the end of the tunnel, was getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And after about 3 years, I remember one day I really had a good focus and sat there and I was quiet. And all of a sudden, I came out of that tunnel and it was like snowing. Like the Matrix. But it was white. Like snow in the nighttime and under the street lamp. And that was, I was about almost 24 years old when that happened. I started when I was 18, so it took me 6 years for that transformative process. But you see, I didn't care how long it took me. And I think that's part of the issue.
You exercised patience. You didn't even,
Right? Most people want an outcome, and it's like me, I just didn't want to die. I just wanted to live.
Wow. And you were waiting,
But this is only part of the story, Robert, because in that moment, I realized that my journey had just begun. In that moment, when I came into that place of being in the light, this was the beginning of my life. It wasn't the 6 years up to that. This was now the beginning.
Yeah.
Right?
And you were thankful and just all that. You weren't going for anything else but this. You go, this is it. It was like, not that anymore, not that.
It wasn't that. I never had a smorgasbord of things. It was, I knew that that was it. I always knew it was. And it wasn't a hard thing for me to do. Hold on, Robert. I got to take a quick break here. I got to try to pay some bills. The foundation is supported by your tax-deductible contributions. Please write to P.O. Box 1000, Grants Pass, Oregon, 97528, or go to fhu.com. You can make a tax deductible donation there, or go to, if you want to take somebody, a friend, antidoteforall.com. That's antidoteforall.com. I'll be right back with more. Okay, now this is 1 minute for promotion. If you haven't been to fhu.com, you have not discovered a library of material on literally every subject that affects human beings. And I suggest that now's the time. There's no time like the present. FHU.com, there's a pay side to that. I think it's $10 a month. I think you get with it the New Insights newsletter. And that's, classic writings from my dad. And it's really worth 10 bucks a month. If you want to support my dad, it's P.O. Box 1000, Grants Pass, Oregon, 97528. Or you go to FHU.com, and that's where you make a tax-deductible donation. David Masters, I'll be right back with more.